Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hanger Farm Arts in Totten. Will you please welcome a man who doesn't like horses in the road? It's Richard Herring. But he loves pumpkins. Oh, no, that's... I can't refer to that. OK, hello, my fine friends. Welcome. It's lovely to be back in Totten. Actually, this is the first time I've been here. It's very confusing. You're much better than the audience we're going to have in Edinburgh in a couple of weeks. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lightning Strikes Twice podcast. Have I never done that one before? That's actually proper. Thank you to that website. Though I was hanging out, I went to the Elling Tide Mill Experience today, which is one of only two things in Totten. And a boy dressed as a Victorian urchin said he called it Rehullastubus. So I don't know if that's going to catch. Don't know if that'll catch on. That's not fair. Totten also has a Morrison's, which is a quite scary place to go at 5 o'clock on a Saturday evening, I have to tell you. Quite a lot of scary people. All the sandwiches had been like a zombie had been through and just ripped them to pieces. I managed to get an onion bhaji from the deli counter. It was a mistake. That is, I do not recommend. There may be a restaurant here somewhere. I don't know. It was sort of endless, weird streets. Used to be the smallest village. No, the biggest village in England. I often look at the news in an area just to see what's going on. Totten News. The big news in Totten, as we record this, Totten motorist faces ban for going 5 miles per hour over limit. That is genuinely... That is generally the top story. Has never happened in Totten before. Unbelievable. There's a mountain of unused PPE as well. That seemed quite a serious story, so I moved on from that. People here in the room, I just will say that after the show, I will be out in the foyer. I'm very happy to say hello and do selfies and chat with you. I will also be selling mainly my books. You can buy another emergency questions books with different emergency questions in, Would You Rather book, and my memoir about, I haven't mentioned, I've only got one testicle, I haven't mentioned that. I never mention it. Can I Have My Ball Back? Problem with Men. There's also some DVDs there as well, Fist of Fun, and my last show, and Happy Now as well, which I've got so many copies of that. Just make me an offer for Happy Now. If you still use DVDs, if you're at home, you can buy those downloads and books from GoFasterStripe.com. Right, let's crack on because we have an absolutely fabulous guest for you this week. He is probably best known, I would imagine you're here to see him talk about performing as Dwayne Looney in Hotel Trouble. That's why. Though, of course, he also did provide the pit commentary on the video game Formula One 2003. He did so well on that, he came back and did the pit commentary on Formula One 2004. That one didn't go as well because he was not invited back. Will you please welcome the incredible Colin Holt, ladies and gentlemen. It's Colin Holt.
Thank you.
I've got two drinks.
I forgot to bring his mic on, which was good because I didn't smash it against the chair. Well done, Colin.
Hello. Lovely to see you. Lovely to see you.
What were you referencing?
The pit manager.
You played Dwayne Looney in Hotel Trouble.
I wrote that part with hail or pace. I didn't write.
Did he have a moustache?
I can't remember which. No.
That was Pace.
Oh, God. I feel so bad.
No, it was Hale. No, it was Pace. Norman Pace.
It was Norman Pace. Lovely man.
He is lovely. He's one of my good friends.
I didn't write it with him.
No.
But I wrote it for him.
Did you?
Well, he got cast. I wrote a part and he got cast.
Right.
But I was in it as a footballer. And I'm the worst footballer and know nothing about football. but I met David Beckham.
Wow.
Because I did a Vodafone advert and he did a selfie with me.
Yeah. I mean, you've done everything.
I've done everything.
The other thing I mentioned was the pit commentary. This is very early on in your career.
Yeah, that's right.
The pit commentary on Formula One 2003 and 2004.
Yep, got £350 each time.
That's nice. What happened in 2005?
Didn't want me anymore.
No. Nope.
Didn't want me, but I did. I got quite early on in my career, I got quite a lot of jobs. Sorry, I feel like I'm talking to my mum's friends. hello, everyone. Do you still feel that every now and again? You do a show that you're doing like a show for your mum's friends. Do you ever get that?
No, I feel like I'm doing it for a worldwide audience.
I did a lot of shows for my mum's friends. Well, sure. I did a lot of shows for my mum's friends early on, and that's what led to Formula One.
No. Right.
But I did a lot of training videos when I started out,
right,
when I left Manchester, for like Quicksave and Homebase and stuff like that. But I went into the audition. And I went, and it was my agent at the time, right? I can't remember. I think they were called KMC. They might still be around. But everyone went, KFC. And I was like, no, KMC. But they'd ring me up and like go, well, we got something for you. What is it? It's a training video for Quicksave. Things are looking up. You're like, okay. But I went in and I just sort of did an Alan Partridge impression because I think I was really hungover. I'm like, fuck that. I don't want to do this training video. So I went in all like, hi, welcome. So you got a job at Quicksave. You know what I mean? This kind of thing. And they thought it was amazing. And then I did like 5 years of Quicksave training videos. Wow. Every now and again, I meet someone, and they're like, I've seen your training videos. I go back to Nottingham, and I was like, I watch one of you. Making Quicksave people sound very bad here, don't I? Mm-hmm. But they're like, kind of, I saw you in one of them training videos. And they were so rude to the people working there. There was one right where I'm looking in a mirror. And you've just started at Quicksave. It was like, so you've just started at Quicksave. Like, I did this sort of Alan Partridge voice. Like, take a look in the mirror, right? You might think, and I'm looking in a mirror, so the camera's behind me with me in a mirror. I'm like, take a look in the mirror. You might think you look pretty cool. I can remember it all. You might think you look pretty cool because your girlfriend likes your new nose ring. Or your boyfriend thinks, thinks purple hair is cool these days or whatever. Then I turn round to the camera, right? So I'm in talk saying that in the mirror. I turn round to the camera and go, take another look. It was so aggressive and mean. And it was like, if you want to look like a... Do you know what I mean? If you want to look like a punk... People are turning away from Quicksave in droves because of it. You know, it's really like arrogant, like... Not arrogant, but like... aggressively telling them off.
And you, this is 2000, and this is the early 2000s when I met you, and you looked like a tiny child.
I was a child.
So a tiny child saying that to someone must have looked amazing.
Yeah, I know, but that was funny because actually I was like literally wearing like a shirt and tie and a blazer. That, do you know what I mean? Like looking like this, but talking in this kind of like, hey, buddy. Oh, that was it. When a customer walks in, say hello. It was like that. It was a say hello, good morning, or a grunt, if that's all you can manage. It was so horrible. fucking but fun days. And I was in like £500 a time. I was like, amazing. This is amazing. Yeah, yeah. But I just left.
You could have just done that your whole life. Imagine just.
I sort of miss it. It was fun.
We'll get you back. Well, this will and get
I,
you back.
Yeah.
If you listen,
I was a very big fish in that pond. They were like, "How do you do it?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I just turn it on." And, you know.
Well, anyway. I can tell you when I first met you. I can tell you the date because I wrote about you in my long-running blog. It was the 1st of August 2004.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of the Edinburgh of that year, and what
did
I wrote.
Did you write it this day, that day?
Yeah, I wrote it. Well, wrote it. Well, I usually write the next day or the evening, sure, but yeah. Sure. So sure. This was current. This is what I said. So I met Colin and Fergus, which was your double act at the time.
Yep.
A young double act with fresh and similar faces, who I scared with stories of Edinburgh debt.
Oh fuck!
Do you remember that?
You remember scaring us?
Yeah. Well, Fergus told me about. Fergus was on talking about his book, and
on the book version
of this podcast.
He didn't get on the big.
He hasn't been on the big. Don't worry, Colin.
Sure.
And I mean, no, he did. I wouldn't get him to come to Totten. Yeah. No, I have some respect for him. But he talked about us.
Right.
And that you were fresh-faced and looking forward to Edinburgh.
We went out.
You how much you were going to lose and you...
Did he tell you we went out and sort of... I just remember hugging in the street afterwards because we were so upset.
What I love is how much glee I have in my
house. Oh, my God. No, but it was like... we were so excited to meet you, I guess, you know, because you were a big star and inspiration to us and all that. We were but children, as you say, And then you sort of told us how much debt we were going to get and how... I always remember you were sat on the sofa. I think you were having a bad day with hindsight. Your show that year was about depression and stuff,
yeah, I think
wasn't
so,
it?
Yeah.
I think it sort of ended... Yeah, it was the Hercules one, was it?
I think it was the Hercules year.
It was wonderful.
Thank you. It was a difficult year. It was a difficult
year. Sure. But in my mind, you're in your pants. It's a bit like, do you know that scene in La Haine? And they sort of copied it in Boogie Nights.
Right.
With Alfred Molina, where they go around to get drugs. And there's a guy in like a dressing gown in his pants. And he pulls out a gun and starts firing around. That's what it was like. But with Richard Herring. It was terrifying. But no, we were very excited. And it just... I remember you were just like, all right, yeah, come in, you know, like, so you're doing this old thing, are you? And it was very like, so you think a double act's going to work, do you? You know, it was very like that.
Wow.
But I remember you walked out in your pants. In my mind, you're in your pants.
I probably was.
I do remember things differently and just went, you said something like, we never made any money and we did really well. It was so mean. But we became more friends after that.
We did. Although I called you Fergus or Colin all the way through, both
of you.
Which
was hilarious.
It was hilarious. So it's very rude of me.
Very dad hilarious.
But also, we'll get this out of the way and then we can move on.
Yeah.
There was a part. There was an incident with a pan.
Yeah.
I don't really remember the details anymore, but it's become a slight legend and it's been mentioned in the podcast. So there
was
a there was a porridge pan.
Yeah.
I didn't write about it in my blog. I'm surprised about that. And I got fed up of washing up your porridge pan.
Yeah,
I think it was your porridge pan.
It was me.
So I left it to see how long it would take before you washed it up. And you never... Eventually, after 2 weeks, Chris Addison just washed it up because it was bad.
But you know, do you know now that I've discovered I've got ADHD?
I do. So
that is a hate crime.
It is. <just said. laughs> I did realise. I did realise that
I'm getting
today.
A lot of scores settled. But also, I grew up with no sense of things getting done. I grew up in without getting heavy straight away. You know the whole attachment theory thing with what is it? Avoidant and ambivalent, and then one which is just fucked. It was just chaotic, and we were quite like that.
Right.
And I know that's not an excuse, but it just would have never occurred to me. Just wouldn't have. Also, it was scrambled eggs, though. But I can remember that. But I can't remember to wash it up. But I can remember 20 years later that it was scrambled eggs, not porridge.
Right. Yeah, well, that makes sense. That's even worse in a way.
But I've always felt bad, very bad, because years later, you know when you get those fucking, and I don't know if you ever read it, but you get those kind of like, what's your maddest Edinburgh story? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's the maddest thing? And I put a sort of like, oh, Richard Herring always bangs on about that fucking thing. But actually, he like made us really depressed. So. But then I felt really bad because I was like, yeah, but he was probably not very happy at the time. And like, I do that a lot where someone does like jokey thing and I do like, really depressing thing. I guess it's the quick save guy, you know. Another look. You know?
I think it sounds like I was, I mean, like it's funny because in the blog, I'm like, you know, I made them scared. And like, I'm obviously, yeah. I always thought it was funny to do it. I don't think I'd really scared you, I guess. But I think I might have been taking the piss, to be honest.
I don't know. I think it was it? Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had a really nice year.
Yeah.
That was our first year and it went great, you know. I think eventually you came back, you went, yeah, I saw your show last night. But you said, yeah, it was very good.
It was good. I watched, there's an
and
old...
And we lived together the next year, didn't we?
I think so, yeah.
Fuck, you know, with the ADHD, you just forget these things.
It's there's some Edinburgh, you know, people that I forget I've lived with at all. Yeah. So, you know, and they go, enough. Oh, remember that Edinburgh we lived together?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Because it is like a bit of a cavalcade. There was one flat we lived in where the outdoor, I think it might have been that first one,
yeah,
where you could just push the door downstairs and you didn't need the key. You could just walk in.
Yeah, don't even worry about it.
it was, you know, happy days. But there we go.
Yeah.
I watched you on it.
Chris Addison, I remember.
Was lovely.
Lovely. Yeah. Lot of fun. He, on the opposite side, turned up with a DVD player. And I went, wow, it's a DVD player. That's how long ago it was, 20 years ago. And he went, yeah, I just bought it. I'll probably give it away at the end. And I was like, wow, you're so cool. Oh, my God. And also, he showed us the first ever pilot of The Thick of It. Do you remember that? And it was genuinely, like, utterly amazing. It was like, I've never seen anything like this. It was a real kind of, just when you've seen something...
I was just sitting in my pants.
Yeah, I know.
So I probably
and then I watched
grumpy.
Your show afterwards. No. It was very good.
No. Well, I watched you on Edinburgh and Beyond. Do you remember doing Edinburgh and Beyond? That's just
with Al Murray.
Al Murray was hosting it, and you guys were doing. Yeah. You were closing the show, and it was a very funny.
Oh, really?
Again, it was like a sketch about a drama class, which could be like, oh, this could be
Peter and Sarah. Yeah,
yeah this could be.
Could be obvious.
Could be bad, but it's very good. So check that out. Nice to see. Is there another?
It
Colin?
Makes me sad to think about it.
Does
know?
It?
Does it make you sad sometimes?
Well, it's sort of weird how long ago it was. It doesn't feel.
But I mean, like the double act thing of like, I don't know, just like, oh, that was really good and great. But then you get to a point where you can't go back.
Yeah, it makes me sad.
And I'm happy what I do.
Not because I want to go back, just because it makes me sad.
Well, I don't really want to go back because then when you do try, sometimes you're immediately like, I think about 8 years ago we sort of started writing a thing together and we lasted about an hour.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, we remember like fighting or anything, it was just like, oh, I remember why, you know.
Yeah, it's difficult. I've done a few double acts and it's difficult to keep them. I'm sort of amazed by any, the double acts that are lifelong and everyone, and both people are still friends and seem to have never had a crossword, I can't really understand, because I think you need a little bit of...
Like Vic and Bob or something.
Vic and Bob
seem so in love.
They seem
now,
pretty good.
So,
I mean, French and Saunders genuinely seem like the best friends in the world. Fuckers.
I know.
And they're really successful.
But I feel like I failed that in some ways.
Right.
I mean, this is me putting... God, is it all right if you guys go? No. No, do you know what I mean? Like, I should have... I guess it's just a thing I do to myself. Like, I should have somehow maintained the friendship. Do you know what I mean? Or somehow...
It's so...
Been
but
less
you're,
of a twat.
You were... No, I think... Well, everyone's a twat and everyone's, you know, everyone's... bullying and not bullying and bullied in any relationship like that, I think. Yeah. So you will make mistakes. And, you know, it's very rare. There's so many... I guess, even by that stage, I'd have been going to Edinburgh for 15 years at that point, and I'd have seen so many young double acts coming through and know that most of them implode and go wrong. And, you know, But equally, you've both gone on to do extremely well. So.
Yeah.
I mean, your career is quite astonishing. When you look, you've been in like nearly everything, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in
quite a few things.
Oh, well, look,
I haven't been in Coronation Street.
Oh, well, that's the still time.
I've put you Quick Save, Home Base, Game.
It seems like if someone's got a sketch show, and often not a very good sketch show, they want someone to...
Every forgotten sketch show you can imagine,
You were in... I'm not saying these weren't good, but... No, they weren't. Walliams and Friend, you were in...
Walliams and Friend. I was in for like 20 seconds.
Well, that's you in it. Al Murray's Personality Disorder, where Al
That
Murray...
was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it really was. It didn't work, I suppose, but it was. But Al was, I mean, you know Al well, presumably.
I do.
And he was a lovely friendship.
He is, he's a lovely boy. The Emily A. Tack Show, you're in?
Yes, again.
That's another sketch
very
show.
Good friend.
But then, Emily A. Tack, very good as well. I was going, but then some good ones. Murder and Successville, where you were Piers Morgan.
Yeah. Did
you? Did you? I mean, I saw all of Murder and Successful. So, but did you go for? Sometimes they go for the bang on impression. Sometimes they go for nothing.
I don't
like,
think I'm that good an impressionist. Right. There are people like Luke Kempner on it who's just astonishing.
Yeah.
And I was generally just doing a stupid take on it. But that one they gave me like. What's it called? Where they put stuff on your face?
Prosthetics.
Prosthetics. No, they just rub shit on my face. But it was, they gave me like a chin, right. Like sort of no chin. It just looked hideous and in no way like Piers Morgan. Right. So it was just like a weird looking man. But I was like a super villain in that. So I just played it like, just did a posh voice, but played it like Lex Luthor or whatever, you know.
That
but
was
I
great.
Didn't try to nail it because I don't really quite. I could do it in McKellen very well, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Right. But it's a great show. That was a fantastic show. It was quite an improvised show, right?
Yeah.
You had to work around the celebrities and...
Yeah, quite terrifying. Yeah.
But it's a really good show.
Oh, it's great fun. Tom Davis kind of makes it, of course.
Yeah, Tom Davis is amazing. So but you've also been in Ghost, Red Dwarf, Benidorm, Alan Partridge. I mean, it's everything.
Yes.
It's incredible. And it's nice, and all it? The Ricky Gervais things you're in, all the...
Yeah, yeah.
Ricky, I won't watch them on principle, but they are...
Fair enough. Fair enough. Watch my... There is a clip of my... Bloopers, just go for that.
Okay, I'll watch that.
If you must. No. Well, I mean, to be honest, working with Ricky Gervais is the most fun.
Because
it's like, he, you know, obviously in life, as an actor or a writer or a comedian, you've got to get through gatekeepers all the time, haven't you? You're always trying to convince people there's something about you or there's worth getting me in. And he's just like, you're really funny and you can improvise stuff. Just go. Do you know what I mean? There's no... Yeah. And he's... You know, all those people like Al Murray and so on have believed in me, you know, and other people sort of don't see that or whatever. But he's the one who's the most who just 100% gives me free rein, you know.
And I've been told they're like the most successful sitcoms in the world by Ricky Gervais on Twitter.
Sure, yeah, yeah,
just
yeah.
Just constantly.
Nobody's perfect, but, you know, but they are, yeah.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
So do you get recognised a lot from the...
Quite from those ones.
Afterlife, presumably.
Do you know what, Richard? I'm such a chameleon. I think that's why no one recognises me. Because I transform so much. You know? A lot of people recognise me from the training videos. But I had a thing in the Afterlife where I play this very camp sort of Amdram guy.
Yeah.
You know, which I do anyway. I was basically doing that through the pandemic with my Anna Mann character on Zoom. So I was just ready to go. Let's go. It was so much fun, but
I have seen that clip where you improvise.
There's a bit where I talk about taking it up the ass, but I go my choice like that, right? Which I really enjoyed doing because it was just, and then that was on the blooper. So quite a lot of people shout that at me sometimes. But it's a bit weird, isn't it? People go a bit mad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like I remember you talking about this years ago, or hearing you talk about this, the moon on the stick thing.
Yeah.
But like. And obviously, no one's, but like these guys, I was with my kids at a pub, and these guys go, oh, can you do a video? We love that bit in Afterlife. You know, can you go, my dad's your biggest fan of that. Can you go My Choice? And I was like, oh, I was a bit, you know, being a bit betwixt, like, oh, okay, if I must. You know, like enjoying it, basically, really lapping it up. It was like Mum's Friends were back. So I did, like, oh, My Choice, you know. And then we went on this, and then they went, oh, thanks, you know, went off. And then I went on this little boat. You could get a boat. It was by this sort of country pub where you could get on a boat and go up and down with my kids, right? So I took them this boat, and then they like followed us and like went on this bridge, and they were like going, "My choice!" And I was like, "Fuck off!" But then they all jumped in the river. Like it sent them mad. You know what I mean? They got so excited. This girl was just going, "My choice! My choice! My choice!" Like they couldn't remember why or what.
Yeah.
And I say, "Stop. Please stop. My children hate
it must be really weird with
it
kids.
Was really
it has a good luckily.
They were like, Daddy, what's happening? You know?
It doesn't really happen. It was a few years after Fist Fun, but not many years after Fist Fun. And I've gone to Bath with this girl I was seeing. We're having a restaurant. And then these young kids, I can't even remember all the details of this, but these young kids saw me through the window and were like waving and just messing around. They'd obviously recognised me and liked me. But they then sort of liked me. Well, they were being fans.
Yeah.
But then they sort of came into the restaurant.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they were still messing around. But it feels like a dream because I'm thinking, why didn't someone tell them they weren't allowed in the restaurant?
Yeah.
But they were sort of, I sort of ignored
Nobody's
them.
Nobody's coming to save me.
No one came to save me. I ignored them, but they were sort of sitting in the restaurant and barracking me.
Were they ordering food?
I can't remember. They must have done. They must have got a table. And then I went to the loo.
We're just here to see Richard.
I went to the loo, and two of the men followed me to the loo.
Oh,
And so I went into the cubicle and they said, oh, I hate it when guys are so scared of their tiny penis they have to go in the cubicle. But I was sort of, it was really strange.
Yeah.
And then I lost my temper with them. And then the other, I remember a guy said to me, oh, you were doing really well with that. And then you lost your temper with them. You're going, fuck, I mean, there were people bullying me in a restaurant. Yeah. Why didn't you step in and get them kicked out? It was really weird. But they, they just got, they were just, it was like lit kids, but they just kind of got overexcited about the idea of the man who'd been on TV 4 years ago in a restaurant.
But also, you get like that, but then the second it's gone, you miss it. Like, where are those guys? My choice. It's me, my choice guy. No? Okay, fine.
Well, it is.
Because they forget. They forget very quickly. You've got to keep appearing on the telly. That's why I've done all those sketch shows that no one watched.
But look, you've been in. Look, the Alan Partridge, Ghost, Red Dwarf, Benidorm, there's fantastic. Ghost is such a great show. I watched that with my daughter, and it's one of those shows that, I mean, I watched it all before when my daughter was younger, and then I'm watching it all again with her, and it's just joyous to watch.
Bamber
Gascoigne's house.
In his house. Yeah.
He could be a ghost in that.
He died. Oh, God. I'm not entirely sure who he is.
you're too young.
Oh, University Challenge
you're
guy.
You're sweetly too young.
I only know who he is because of the young ones.
Yeah, Bambi.
Yeah.
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 Did you do in Ghosts? What, you were part of the?
I was like a investigator.
Right.
In one episode.
Yeah.
But I did my stock characters. I've realised as I get older, I do two things. I do sort of camp. And go, my choice. And then I do like a Nottingham bloke. And that's it.
Okay.
And I can do a sort of Alan Partridge quick save thing.
Yeah.
But
well, that's enough.
That's all you need.
You only need one thing, really.
But it does get harder the older you get, having to go, I've got to come up with a new character.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I don't know. So, yeah, but that was very much the Nottingham bloke.
Yeah.
It was very good fun, you know, filming
They seem like nice people.
Wonderful. Really lovely. Yeah. Really nice. Who are they? No, all the guys are great. Nice.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And let's talk about Anna-Man, which I've only seen on video. And I thought I was led to... Well, I say that, but I met her backstage here today.
Just now.
That's why
I've still got my makeup.
But I was talking to you and I said, you still do Anna-Man and you had a dress on. I thought, yeah, you probably are. But, you know, you don't like to assume in show business.
Yeah.
So where did that come from, that character and...
Anna-Man.
Yeah.
So if you don't know who that is... Anyone? No? Okay, fine. Anna-Man is an actress character I started doing... Well, I was in a dressing room, right? So her catchphrase that is say, she, so I ask someone, what's your name? And they say their name and I go, fuck off, I love it, like this. And that was a real woman, an actress who I was doing this job right very early in my career, a radio job. And it was a murder mystery, and I was playing like doorman or something. Do you know what I mean? Agatha Christie is sort of like, this way, sir, you know. And I was there, and all the actors were there. And it's funny, in a green room, all the actors just start sort of going, they're all trying to hustle. You sort of realize they're all going, do you want me to tell your, I know a director you work with, do you want me to say your name to him? And sort of, you know, it's all like these get things going on. It was really, there was one guy just kept using the phone. Because I realised he was getting free phone calls, so we just like in the dressing room, like so we did about 50 phone calls, just like doing his bills and stuff. Do you know? Right. But anyway, this one woman came in and she was just so incredible, and I was reading Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, and you've read it. And she walked in and just went, she was really like an hour late, and like, sorry, I'm late, everyone, fuck, you know, and just like spilling this coffee everywhere, and just sort of sat down, and she went, what are you reading? What are you reading, darling? And I went, oh, it's Dostoevsky. And she went, fuck off. Fuck off, I love it. And she went, how old are you, darling? And I was like, whatever, I was at 25. At 25, she went, fuck off. I love that, you're wonderful, you know. And then from that, I just started being her all the time.
Yeah.
Because I was obsessed with her. The one thing she said, which I do use it, I'm sort of becoming her
again
now.
Yeah, it's good, I like
it. One thing she said when she was talking about a thing that was going on, that was it. She went to see some Hungarian jazz fusion. And she said this line, which I now say when I at gigs, and she goes, I sat there greedy with anticipation. What a wonderful thing to say. And I just thought it was so beautiful. You know, especially coming from the Midlands, from Nottingham, you know, and not that it was a terrible place or anything, but you know, just to hear people just, you know, gorge on language like that, and just everything is, and I feel like me as myself, I can be very down on myself, unconfident and stuff, and just life itself is just for the living, and it's, what are you reading? Fuck, I love that! You know what I mean? It's just, it's so exciting. Yeah. And then it gave me this, so then, yeah, I've done like multi-character shows, and she just became, originally I just had a headband, because you know those shows where you're just swapping jackets or whatever, a headband and a cardigan, and then, and then I did like this taster tape for this company, and they gave me make. It never occurred to me to do makeup because I never saw it as drag.
Yeah,
I don't really get drag in that. Like I enjoy watching it, you know, but I'm not. I don't see myself as that community sort of thing. It's more a character thing. But I just once I got the makeup, and it was like that. I remember seeing Ian McKellen on Parky years and years ago, and he's talking about Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
and he said, "We tried on various noses and ears and hats." And then they put on this nose, and I looked in. This is for Gandalf. I looked in the mirror, and I went, Gandalf. it was the most wonderful thing I've ever seen. But, is that you? And it was. It was Gandalf. And then he was Gandalf. I mean, how? Imagine living your life like that. Like comedians are often so cynical and down on stuff. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Even though we're, you know, these wonderful, joyous people, but we're also like really, and just to be so rich. But anyway, but I did have that moment where I looked in the mirror and had the wig on and the makeup, but it was a real like, Anna, you know, she's here. And then I, was going through. I had a horrible, you know, like a lot of people, a lot of comedians especially, had like a horrible depression or realization of depression from, do you know that book? Matt Haig, you know Matt Haig?
Yeah.
And did Reasons, who's my age and sort of from where I'm from and everything, so it's very good. He did a thing called Reasons to Stay Alive, I think it was called. I mean, it was a really good book. And I wasn't particularly suicidal at the time. I say particularly. I mean, the fact that I say particularly doesn't sound good, does it? But it just really hit, and I was like, fuck, I've had depression, blah, blah, blah. And then, when was that? 26. And then David Bowie died, and I watched We Could Be Heroes, and I just had this sort of, fuck, I've got to, you know where he stands in that video with his makeup, and he's amazing and stuff, and I just thought, fuck, I've got to go and do it. And I was going to do this show about depression with me, just, you know, another comedian talking about depression, you know, which would have been fine, I think. And then I got this makeup, and I just thought, what if Anna's talking about it? So it starts, you know, with her just like going, have you ever been depressed? I have. It was fucking shit, you know. And, I just felt I could talk about it as someone else.
Yes, yeah.
And then I became over. And it, yeah.
And that's anyway. So, but I mean, it's because, you know, you've done several shows with her. I mean, you did a show called The Death of Anna.
Yeah, which was the last one, yeah.
But she hasn't quite died. Did she?
Well, I mean, I suppose I've finished the tour and everything, but that one's done the best. You know, it got nominated and all that stuff. Sure. It's been wonderful. But that in that... I talk about having ADHD through Anna kind of thing within that. And the idea is she's going to die. She's been diagnosed with this this thing, you know. And she goes back over her life. And then it ends, basically, she says, I'm leaving him, as in me, to live my life. And I'm going off. It makes me cry thinking about it. But it was very sort of moving, sad ending, you know. The idea that she was actually letting me go free.
Yes.
That cut to 6 months later, I am skint and literally begging people to let me do Ant-Man again. But no, I have started doing stand-up as myself.
Yes. It's really interesting.
Which I'm really enjoying.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think it's very valid the way you've done it and really great the way you've done it to discuss those difficult issues through someone else, but it's still yourself. Yeah. And that is a great way to communicate those ideas, but also for you to be able to express them. Yeah. But then it is that interesting transition away from, you know, getting a successful character and deciding to move away and trying to be yourself again, I think is a difficult gear shift.
And I felt, it's getting there now. I think it's really working now. I'm really excited about it. But what I've had to go through this whole thing where I just felt really... This sounds very actory, but I really felt naked, raw. I felt like raw flesh on stage, just talking about my own life and my own self. Because I look at stand-ups, you know, and I'm always like, I don't know how you do it because I know why you think you're interesting. That sounds very damning, doesn't it? But you've got to be someone who believes their opinions and stuff.
You do. You have to be very, you know. But
whereas I can do that through a character, but as myself, I'm like, you don't want to hear from me.
Yeah, and to an extent, I was sort of the same. You know, even the Lee and Herring was not really me. It was a character.
Yeah.
And then it was really difficult for me to shift it, you know, because it was sort of part, in a way, Stuart wasn't part of the double act. Stuart was always himself, really, and there was an element of the double act, but he was able to just take that and run with it. Yeah. Whereas my character didn't really work on its own, and also I didn't want to carry on being that character. But I still think, you know, that's the hardest thing as a comedian, and you hear Robin Ince talk about this as well, but being your authentic self on stage, even if it is a character, but to be authentic is the most difficult thing.
Yeah.
And I was someone who was very much thought, I want to do acting, I want to be a character thing. So, you know, I think eventually I've found...
Now I love it. But I genuinely had... It sounds very actuary, but I sat in this lovely pub in Brighton where they have all quotes on the wall and I was trying to write this stuff. And a lot, you know, I want to talk about a lot of trauma from childhood and all that stuff, but make it funny. I know it sounds a ridiculous comparison, but like Richard Pryor is like the closest. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. In that I want to be able to talk about the darkest, most upsetting, moving things, but in such a way that's really funny and silly.
Sure.
That's, for some reason, I want to do that.
Yes.
I was sat looking at these quotes, and the quote was from Sappho. Okay. He was a Roman poet.
Yeah.
It was, that which cannot be written must be wept.
Right.
And I don't know, that just clicked with me, and I was like, fuck it, go out and do it, you know. And then I went out and I just started doing these gigs, and it wasn't funny. People were very angry. They were like, why would you talk? But I still get... But no, it was... I could always camp it up and dick it about. Dick it about. You know that phrase?
I do, you dick it about.
You wouldn't know, but comedians, we like to say we dick it about. and then weirdly, now I've got to this point where Anna is sort of coming... back in again. It sounds so wanky saying like this, but Anna is coming back in into me. But it's like, it's, I like to think of it, it's a bit like Thor Ragnarok, the movie, when the hammer gets destroyed and then Odin comes and he goes, the power was in you all along. You know, that's basically what's happening, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you've got that because you trained as an actor and you've done so much acting, and you know, and but you have that discipline to make that, you know, that character is, you know, is so innate in you because you've worked it out and because you've spliced yourself into it. You know, it's really interesting to
sort of slowly
hear that
coming together.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you've channeled yourself through her. Mm. So you have sort of slightly become...
But I talk about her as if people... I'd be like, Anna was really good tonight. You know, almost like jealously, like. And people, but that was you. And I go... Yeah, but Anna's really funny, you know. Oh, God. I'd get annoyed at her for existing. I know it sounds mad, but it would get... you know, I get a bit like that.
That's good. I'm like that with my puppets.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. I think about your puppets. Yeah.
Don't worry, you know, just keep doing it till you're my age and you'll be, won't matter if you're mad, it'll be fine. Let me ask you, it's really interesting. I actually didn't know anything about the ADHD or anything.
Oh,
so
right,
I did,
yeah.
I wrote down a joke. I thought, oh no, I better not do that joke now because that's.
Oh, yeah. I'm not precious.
No, I know, but it's, you know, I would never have pegged you as. I guess because you were just, you know, when I really knew you were young and fresh-faced.
Yeah.
But, you know...
I seem quite calm and stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's from learning a lot of... When you discover neurodiversity, you sort of discover... because of the neurodiversity was there, a lot of other things have crept up, you know? So, like, depression, all these things can come from repression of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
People think, oh, yeah, but you're not ADHD. You're not like, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
When I am Anna, I am. I mean, I'm being quite like that now,
yeah.
You know? And my head's going like that all the time.
Okay.
You know? So it's, yeah. You realise it's not always people you think.
No, no. And I just, you know, you seemed upbeat as, you know what I mean. You don't seem like a depressed person, but of course, that's what depressed people are like.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And comedian, most comedians. And part of the reason I'm not going to Edinburgh this year is because last year it just hit me the amount of pressure from all those Edinburghs. Like you say, you know, probably in 2004, I was probably quite depressed.
Yeah. I still think of it when I'm writing my shows, genuinely.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. But, like, because you say a thing about at the end, maybe it was just in a preview, but just about, you know, get if you're feeling, you know, shit, whatever, you know, get some help or something.
Yeah, maybe.
That's not great.
Show was really, I worked through a depression without really, you know, any outside help. The show helped me, but I did a lot of mental things in that show.
Right.
And the show came from quite a mental place, and I was quite suicidal,
right.
But I wouldn't have minded if I died at that point.
Yeah,
so, and I did find going through all that stuff that I did reach a level that I felt happier with. And it was, you know, a lot of things happened through that show that helped me. And one of them was to go back to stand up, and one of them was to be more confident about, because I dated 50 women in 50 days for that show.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It made me more confident about the idea of dating people and things like that, you know. So it was a big show, but I think that year was difficult. But I think Edinburgh, there's always like a couple of days and sometimes a couple of weeks where you're just unhappy. I mean, you're just really destroyed by it. And I found last year, as well as one of the reasons I'm not going is just because I feel it's too expensive for everyone, and it makes me feel a bit uncomfortable that I wouldn't, the 18-year-old me, wouldn't be able to go perform or see stuff there.
Oh, so you morally think it's sort of...
I just sort of, that makes me feel uncomfortable, but a lot of it was just feeling that everywhere I went in Edinburgh, there was a memory of something, you know, it was like I felt fossilized. I felt the fossils of my past were kind of clawing their way out of the dirt to get me. So I thought, I'll take a year off.
Yeah, great. Okay.
At least a year off. But, you know, but equally, it wasn't so bad. But I think that's, you know, a lot of comedians are depressed, and a lot of people go through, as all people are.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ADHD thing has become almost a sort of, almost a joke because so many comedians
have. I know I went up going, oh, this will be an interesting thing to talk about. Every fucker at Edinburgh had ADHD.
So there's one comedian going, I don't have ADHD, and he's winning all the awards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A comedian who doesn't have ADHD.
That minority is getting some support, you know.
So yeah, but equally, it's fantastic that it's out there because people are talking about it, people would have been, you know, in the 90s. No comedians would have talked about being depressed, or, you know, it was such a macho.
Would they not?
Not no one, but it was such a macho environment, and it was such a laddie environment.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Owen O'Neill did a fantastic show about his alcoholism. I remember in the 90s, and it was genuinely amazing because it was a man discussing his problems and his feelings.
Yeah,
and that was one of those shows that really sticks with me as a brilliant Edinburgh show. But most men were just, you know, it was a cock waving contest, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you didn't have a cock,
I do not want to get my cock out.
No,
yeah, I'm not interested. I don't think anyone else wants that, really.
We'll see. We'll see what happens backstage. See what happens.
My mum's friends never did.
Your mum's friends.
It's not for everybody, isn't it?
Right. Let's ask you some emergency questions.
I just remembered one of my mum's friends' plays that we did.
Yeah.
And we did a Greek myth, me and my mate. We were like such a cunt. People were, sorry, I can't say
it. That's okay.
People were such arseholes. We did one of like, Leader and the Swan or something like it wasn't even like Hercules. It was like the most obscure shit.
Yeah.
Greek legend. And then performing it as 8-year-olds. Oh, God, awful. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
It's good.
Yeah.
But you know,
I
this
thought
is...
that would get a better response.
They just think you're pretentious. And...
Yes, I am.
If Colin, you could
I'm
go
actually getting quite depressed.
If you go into a chrysalis like a caterpillar.
A cocoon.
Yeah, and dissolve like a caterpillar does and then turn into something else, but you can choose what you're going to emerge from the chrysalis as. What would you like to emerge from the chrysalis as?
M. Bison. From Street Fighter 2.
Okay. I don't know that reference, but that's...
He's
know
the
Street
final
Fighter.
Boss.
Is he?
And sort of what I attained. Actually, he is a bit of a Nazi, but yeah. Fuck it. They looked they look great.
Yeah, okay.
M. Bison.
Okay. That's very good.
Just off the top of my really? Head, you know.
I forgot to record this one on my phone, so I hope
shit.
It's... I hope it's...
And I've revealed everything.
Hope it's working.
Oh, did you not record it? I didn't record it either.
No, I know. I forgot to say.
Oh, boy. Okay. I'll fingers, come back and do it. Do a proper
crossed.
One in London.
I can see a green thing going across at the back, so something's happening up there.
Okay, great.
We'll see if that goes.
That's the emergency exit sign.
Let me see. What's the worst thing you've ever got stuck in? That's a question I haven't asked very much.
A cocoon. Worst thing I've got stuck in.
Have you ever been stuck in anything?
Have I ever been stuck in anything? Fuck. Probably. I got stuck on a boat.
Did you?
In Tanzania, and I thought I was going to die because we this guy called Captain Jimmy, when I was doing a play in Tanzania, as we do, at the Tamashala Sana, which was a festival.
Wow.
I was doing this play with Fergus, actually. That's where we first ever did a double act together.
Oh, really?
We were these characters called Bill and Ken, worked out afterwards our granddad's names, and we never even realised at the time. And also our middle names, very bizarre. Anyway, we went over to do this play through the drama school and through Manchester Drama School. And this guy turned up one day. He's like, Captain Jimmy. He's all like, he kept going, lovely jubbly, like this, right? And he's like, do you want to go to Zanzibar? And we were like, yeah, sure. And he had like these laminated things that at the time we were like, okay, yeah, looks legit. Do you know what I mean? He just laminated some pictures of Zanzibar and written Captain Jimmy on it. And then we went over on this boat and we were all like, yeah, this is pretty cool, you know. And then we were all kind of people were smoking weed, you know, it was all very cool in Zanzibar. And then on the way back, we sort of realized, Captain Jimmy, we got surrounded by these like the very scary policemen, you know, in sort of uniforms. And they got this guy picked up Captain Jimmy and just whacked him across the face twice. And Captain Jimmy was crying. And we're like, what's happening? You know. And then they made us sign a form that said we can go back to Tanzania, but if we are drowned or captured by pirates or anything, it's nothing to do with them. You know, we sort of had to waver away our lives. Right. And then we ended up on this boat going back. And then my mate had a massive lump of weed. And he didn't know what to do, so he just ate it. It'd be funny if it was me, but it wasn't. So he just sat there like, you know, this whole journey. But yeah, so we stuck. Oh, yeah, and also on the boat back, on the boat there is this lovely just us guys, you know, whoa, having a crazy time. And on the way back, it was like full. It was like the 58 bus. It was like people with TVs taking over. And the engine just cut out, and we all thought we were going to die.
Wow.
And we got home. And all the tutors are there, like, crying on the beach. We thought you died, you know.
Wow.
Captain Jimmy, nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
That's his story. So he was just like running an illegal ferry.
He was just like making up a sort of tourist package,
yeah, yeah.
But it was, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Very dangerous.
That's good.
Very exciting. I haven't done anything like that since, and I never will.
What's the worst thing that's got stuck in you?
Well... Is a pile stuck in you? It's not stuck in you, is it? It's
not
coming
exactly.
out of you.
Yeah, it's sort of coming out.
I did once accidentally finger myself, and no one believes me. Have you never done that? I sort of put it on Twitter going, oh, this would be funny. you know what I mean? Everyone was... But like, I said, like, you know, I was just washing my... Why am I talking about
this? It really wasn't the question, but I'm very happy to have the answer.
In a nutshell, I was washing my asshole. My finger slipped right up there.
Yeah, okay.
And it was fine.
Yeah, nice.
I didn't love it.
Okay.
I didn't hate it.
It's a gateway drug.
It wasn't stuck in me. Came straight out.
It'd be embarrassing to have to go to hospital with your fingers.
Your own finger.
Yeah.
You'd have to have a massive finger.
or a tiny anus. Yeah. Tiny anus.
I regret all of that, what I just said.
I'm not taking it out for any money in the world.
But on Twitter, everyone was like, oh, yeah, likely story. And I'm like, why would I tell you if, like, I wouldn't go, yeah, I'm fingering my arsehole. Oh, shit, I better put on Twitter that it was a mistake. Oh, otherwise, they'll know. Any quick show of hands whose finger they're an arsehole? Accidentally? You lie. Why'd you lie?
Well, while we're in this arena, I'll ask a classic question that I haven't asked for a little while. This is for the people of Tottenham will be very excited about this. Would you rather date a man who was a 6 foot tall penis?
Who was a 6 foot tall?
Yeah, who was literally
like his whole.
He's just a penis.
Eyes?
He would have eyes in there.
One big eye.
I think he would have a face. I think he'd have a face on his helmet. On his helmet.
Okay.
Or a man who, instead of having a penis, had a tiny man.
I have to? Am I fucking these guys?
Well, you're dating them. I can't. You know. You have to
see how it goes. Wandering. Yeah. Maybe, you know, we'll see what happens. So a man, no penis, but
there's a tiny man's attached.
Him again. Like,
no, it's a different man.
Is it you?
It's not. You can be me if you want.
Is it Paul Foot?
You want to be me?
If it was Paul Foot, yes.
Yeah, okay.
The man with a man as a penis.
Yeah.
I can't date a big penis. I won't. I've said it before. I'll say it again. No
you'd
way.
Still, I mean, you're six.
I don't
foot,
care how much.
You're six
I don't
foot
care
one.
What fancy restaurant it takes me to.
You're 6 foot one, so you'd be 1 inch taller than the 6 foot tall penis. So you'd still be the taller of the two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If that's what you were worried about.
Does it have the balls attached?
I think so. I think they would just.
Does
be balls.
It slither along the
yeah,
floor?
Yeah, definitely slivers.
Like a boa. It's not jumping at you.
No, I don't think it bounces. I think it slithers.
So it's actually slithers. So it doesn't matter. It's 6 foot. It's just there on the floor. All right. I'm not dating that, Richard.
Okay. Well, we've all found out about your...
No way.
We've all found out about your prejudices. That is fine. We'll go back to talking about your career in a sec. Let me just check. There's nothing else I want
about my career.
Your lovely career. Well, you were telling me you've been in it. I saw you were in a couple of films, but you're telling me you worked on a film in South Africa. That sounded quite interesting. Do you want to tell us about that? You don't have to.
No. But the guy will hear it.
Okay, then you
let's know. Not.
Okay.
Because I haven't spoken to him since, and I feel like it will break his heart. Okay. Sorry, everyone. I could tell it, and you could cut it out.
No, don't tell. We won't. Let's. The people of Tottenham will go and tell him.
Yeah.
They're notoriously nice man, they're believe. Notoriously unreliable. all right, I'll ask. While I'm thinking of that, I'll ask you another. What was the film? Was that the film Still Life? Is that a different film that you were...
Still Life?
Yeah, tell us about.
I've hardly been in any films. All I want is to be in films. All I wanted originally was being Shakespeare.
Yeah,
the Bard.
Yeah,
you've heard of him.
I do. I'm aware of his work.
But then I ended up just doing like dressed as a woman, doing, like, acting. Acting. What was the question?
There was a film called Still Life.
Oh, yeah, Still Life. I am a cemetery manager.
Yeah, sounds good.
I had
good.
One scene with Eddie Marzan. Is it Marzan?
Yeah, Marzan.
Marzan, not Marzan. Marzan. Who was the nicest little fellow. he is quite little, but just the nicest, loveliest person. And I was so sort of like, oh, hello, you know. And he just sort of like gave me this little wink. Not a sexy wink, but just a like very, you know when someone just goes, it's all right, don't worry. And it was the nicest thing of all time. Aww. But the film's great, Still Life. I highly recommend it. It's very sad. It's a man who goes to funerals where there's no one to go to the funeral.
Okay.
So his job is to go to all these funerals.
Oh, right, cool.
Sounds fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does sound fun.
But it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit like my friend Evie King's written a book about. She's the lady from... she's been on the book club podcast. She's written a book about being the person who organises funerals for people who can't afford to pay for them and that sort of thing. For the council. It's a beautiful book. It's called...
That is...
Ashes to Admin, it's called.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Watch Still Life.
Watch that as well.
And do you know what? I remember going for the screening, right? And the director was like this Italian man who was very cool but quite wild and crazy. And he sort of got up and went, I have ruined this film. Like that, before it started.
Right.
And I have torn it to pieces. I have... this Italian accent is not good. I get that. I have ruined this film, you know, or whatever. I don't know. All right. Don't come at me. But I have ruined this film, you know. And he, well, I've ruined this film. And then sat down and went, and here's the film. So weird. And then we all just watched it, and it was great, you know. But he just had this, like, he thought he just destroyed it. I think it was maybe because some people were cut out of it.
Yeah.
I wasn't, weirdly, because I did not think I was great in it. But and I think he just wanted to say, sorry, you're not in the film. Uh-huh. So, but it was a very, like a... It's like he was having a breakdown in front of us, and then we just all watched the film.
It anyway. Feels like films, movies are like the... You know, they're very unpredictable. Like, given how much money gets put into them,
yeah,
it feels like they shoot a lot of stuff and then they edit it and change it into a different thing and it changes it. It feels the most sort of precarious of art forms, unless you're really an author of who controls absolutely everything.
But
and
when
even
you
then,
watch them, you think, how did this get made? How did you achieve this?
Yeah.
Like, it seems massive and there's so many people involved. How is this not shit out anything? You know.
Yeah, a lot of them are shit.
Some films are shit. Some films are excellent.
Really bad. Some of them good. I can't reference Paul Foot because it's in the future. But listen to Paul Foot in a few weeks.
Very fucking funny.
He does not. He doesn't like films.
He does not like films.
So what was it like having done this Alan Partridge impression in one of your early jobs to work on the Alan Partridge show?
Oh, just the weirdest thing. Because just when I got there, I'd never met him. Do you know Steve?
I know him quite well.
Do you?
Yes. Well, he was in like one of the first Edinburgh shows we did together. And we wrote on the hour.
Are you still sort of...
We don't see each other, but, you know, I don't see any of my friends.
No,
so.
Fair, neither do I. I know what you mean. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a horrible feeling, but no. But it was just bizarre to walk in and onto the studio, and there he was in full stuff, you know, in his wig. It is a wig. I never even clocked it was a wig. It's just so stupid because his actual hair is completely yours, or it was.
Yeah.
He came out of the dressing room and I saw his real hair and I had no idea who it was because it seemed to be about here.
Right.
He looked like a sort of witch. It was and like grey. And I was like, who's that? What's Steve Cooley? But yeah, just to see him on there is incredible.
Yeah.
And he went same drama school as me, Manchester Met.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So he talks a bit about that, you know. I'm things like that. I just hope I'm not shit, you know.
Yes.
I hope I'm doing okay.
I think you're doing okay. I think the fact that they keep asking you back to do other stuff, I think that means you're doing okay.
Great, thank you. That's why
I mean,
came on
this podcast. You're one of those people, you know, obviously I know you've been in lots of stuff and I've seen you every now and again in things, but you are, you know, it's to see someone who you go, oh, God, you're actually in... like 50% of the good shows that have been out in the last 10 years, you know. So it's, even if it's just one part in one episode,
it's just popping up.
It's still like it looks like incredibly impressive on a CV. So I hope you feel that it's, you know, it's interesting to see that you're feeling insecure about it.
Yeah,
I think everyone does.
Yeah.
But you should be thinking, but this is.
I've really come to realize how much just performing live, you know, maybe it's from doing Animant, how much it means to me.
Yeah.
Because although I always just wanted to be on telly and be in these things and stuff, and then you do it and it's great, but it's like on set, I'm so. It's scared and nervous and not always. Often, I've got much better, but only. And Ricky was really helpful for that because he is so like, you know, just do whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like being on stage when you're
I think, you know, but I still feel that about acting. I mean, I don't do very much. I don't do anywhere near as much acting as you, but I was always very self-conscious about it. And then you think, I'm going to be shit and everyone else knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think, most people are thinking that. And I bet there are some people who like to make you feel like that, I think, in order to make themselves feel. But there's
I don't think anyone's ever been a dick like that, you know.
But it is, you know, it is... When I've done well with acting, I've realised it's about just getting into it and being comfortable.
You've done well with acting?
When I feel I've done something good.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
I'll show you backstage. It's
sure.
It's one scene. You know, there's a few things I've done I thought, oh, good, I was the best person for that.
Yeah.
To do that. I mean, they're not meant... You know, I don't think I'm a fantastic actor, but I'd love to do more, actually. And I've always... And I actually just put my... You know, when I started, I wanted to do acting more than anything, really.
Was it?
I did a lot of acting at college, and I was good. And then I really lost my confidence with it.
Right.
To the point that you would go... People, you know, directors would go, oh, are you interested in doing an acting? I'd go, oh, no, you know. And I go... My wife would go, why did you say you don't want to act? You do want to act. Go,
oh, right, right. Yeah. Go, well, nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd go, yeah, oh, yeah. You know, like 5 or 10 years ago. So, you know, it doesn't... When it comes up, it's nice. And I wouldn't like to do it all the time because I think it's quite a boring job.
A lot of it is quite boring.
If you're doing it all
surprising.
The time.
A lot of it is sitting around. Like when we did that Red Dwarf, I was in it for like 1 second.
Right.
We were sat in this airless room for 10 hours while they were like rewriting the script and all that stuff, you know, and it was horrendous.
Yeah.
And it was like so a lot of it does get like that. And I guess you've got to be someone who, again, like with the stand-up thing, you've got to really believe in yourself and really kind of like, you know. And that's the thing also. I think there's very much two types of actors. They're the actors who look fantastic and they're in touch with their emotions in such a way. And it's only now realised I'm neurodiverse, you know, and I am looking into autism at the minute. You know, because within my family people have been... And I don't like to say that because I haven't had diagnosis exactly. But, you know, but it's like I'm sort of realised how when I act, I see someone else and then sort of like become them, sort of step into them. And I can't. And I've realised that a lot of actors aren't doing that. They're finding their own emotions and becoming this thing. Do
right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. That is interesting.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
that's.
But know, it's still a valid form of acting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it may be more valid.
But I feel like if I'm doing like a big, you know, like the Ken, the character in Afterlife, so big and it looks great. When I see it, I'm like, yes, that looks how I thought it would look. But most things, I look back and I go, I look so weird because I'm sort of not sure who I am and I'm being this weird. Yeah. Approximation of a human.
But I think you know you are much more critical of yourself. When
Gosh, you mind going? I just want to chat
it's
to
okay.
Richard.
This is all. Yeah. This is what happens at.
This is what happens.
5 to 10.
Oh God, it
doesn't
so
matter.
Late.
Everyone, they're all going to sleep anyway. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's nice to have a little sleep sometimes.
It's good content.
When you're a parent, it's nice, isn't it? When you go out and you just think. Oh, sometimes I went to the cinema when my kids were like 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Just had a really lovely sleep while they watched a film. It was just
wonderful.
The best. It was the best sleep. Just go. You wouldn't try to sleep. You just drift off, like, and then you'd wake up and go, "Oh, that was so nice."
Lovely. Yeah, yeah.
Little afternoon.
A lot of my performances are like that. Actually, a lot of them go that way.
So look, we're gonna have to wrap up. But is there anything coming up? Is there that you want to promote or mention?
Well, there's a few things of me being an actor. And as I say this now, I realise it's a terrible thing to say for casting directors to hear. I don't think I'm very good at acting. But no.
You are very good.
I know, thank you. So I am a thing called Black Ops at the minute, which is really good fun.
Yes.
It's a great series. And a thing called The Flat Share is out at the minute. I did a little bit in Horseface. That was really good fun.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about that. Oh, fuck, I think everyone knows. But not everyone knows I'm in it, but everyone knows it's coming. But I've got a couple of podcasts. Anna Mann, I'm bringing her back on a podcast. You heard it here first. thing that I think I'm going to call Ask Anna.
Okay.
And then I'm doing a thing as Colin. This is an ADHD thing. One or both of these won't happen. But at the minute, they're going to be amazing. But the other one I'm doing is going to be called Into the Neuroverse. And it's going to be me looking at neurodiversity through my own wonderful mind.
Good.
So look out for those when they come out.
We will.
In
do.
1 month.
Great.
Hold me to that.
I will hold you to it. I'll definitely happen. Oh, look, it's really lovely to see you, and I'm glad you're doing so well.
Thanks,
and,
you
know,
you too.
And well done on all your honesty about everything you've been going through as well. Give it up for the amazing Colin Holt, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you
to everyone here for having us at Hanger Farms. I'll be through there in a sec. You have been listening to Rahulastafa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Colin Holt. He doesn't clean his pans, but he's got a good reason, so now I can't take the piss out of him anymore. Thank you to Scant Regard for doing the music. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, as usual. No, not that one either. No, not that one. Not that one. It's the one from GoFusters Fun. Thank you to everyone at Hanger Farm Arts Centre for being so lovely, and to all the audiences from all of these shows that we always do for coming to see us live. That's very kind of you. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.